If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Electrifying shared mobility basically goes through three major challenges. So there is high acquisition cost, then there is prioritizing good behavior, whether how policies would favor people switching into a good behavior, whether it's electric or whether it's shared. Then finally, when we are talking about electric, it's about charging infrastructure.
So what are the other challenges faced by cities in enabling better mobility services? And how do they get to the ideal 15-minute cities? Well, all this and more is discussed in the feature segment of this episode. Hello and welcome to yet another episode on the Mission Shunya podcast. Wherever you are, hope you are doing well. Thanks for taking time to tune into this podcast today, and I really appreciate it. I am sure at the end of it, you will subscribe to the show and let others in your network know about it. Getting to net zero in terms of emissions takes a lot of effort. It's a global movement, and one key sector is transportation. How do you ensure we move to electric vehicles? How can we enable shared mobility services? And get one less car on the road are just a few of the questions we seek answers regularly. On this episode, we look at how cities are working with partners to enable this transition. So who is our guest and how does his work help us to get a little further in enabling electrification of global public transit systems?
Hi, I'm Venkatesh Gopal. I'm the Partnerships and Business Development Manager at MoveMe. I lead the electrification, business feasibility, modeling, and market launch aspects in our projects. I also get a chance to work with 60 plus technology and operational partners that MoveMe has and work towards helping public organizations and private businesses to design, plan, build, and evaluate shared mobility services.
So Venkatesh, let's begin by looking at your journey. You're currently working in the transportation space, but how did you get here? I mean, solving problems in the transportation sector requires a lot of expertise or skill sets. So how did you end up here? I'm sure you had an interesting journey and some part of it has been in the automobile space. So what's the journey been like?
Yeah, it's been quite a fun journey from my side. So to answer the question, back in my mechanical engineering days, I was so fascinated by automobiles and technology that it took me a while to actually see through vehicles and realize that it's mobility that is a focus and not the vehicles per se. And in that sense, it made a lot of sense to talk about how efficiently we are able to move people from A to B than if we are able to move them in an SUV or a car, basically. So that way, it was easy in the sense to make a switch, but at the same time, it's as difficult as it can be in terms of getting people or convincing people to do that themselves.
True. So early on, you were working on the other end, like working around the vehicle side of things. So How does the switch to mobility happen? When did it exactly happen?
So this was a few years ago when I actually pressed the button. But in all fairness, I went from like car manufacturing sector to a car distribution sector, and that's where I figured out the fun elements of how mobility works, because the company was quite forward thinking, and we used to have certain strategic projects in shared mobility, in electric vehicles, trying to make that work. And that was back in Dubai. Mm-hmm. One of those days, it was just like a lightning bolt. strike where I had a realization that I was stuck in traffic for more than an hour. And that made me think that I was adding to the problem. And being an engineer, that's not what you want to have as a feeling, right? So as engineers, we usually tend to find solutions and make things more efficient.
Correct.
And little do we know that everything that we design in an automobile is kind of making the whole system inefficient. So, okay, it was efficient in a time, but so my awakening, so to speak, was in 2016 or something. And that's when I started looking out. I started looking at my options of what I wanted to do. In that case, I even decided to move cities. Zeroed down on Vancouver because it's a hub in itself and it has so much going on in terms of sustainable mobility and supporting projects that it was one of the things that I wanted to come in, dip my toes and explore. And thankfully, I found MoveMe and Sandra. And since then, it's been fun.
You mentioned about moving cities and landing up at MoveMe. So MoveMe does a lot of work. I mean, most of your work is in convincing cities about sustainable mobility options. From the city's perspective, what are the challenges that they face in, say, adopting new technology, adopting new mobility solutions? What's your experience been in dealing with cities?
Yeah, cities are a lot of fun to work with. And I totally go with the approach that they have. I think they, if I had to define the number of stakeholders in the mobility space, there is cities, there is operators, and there are users. And in this space, I feel that city has the toughest job to do. And in our experience as MoveMe, we've been involved in more than 60 projects over the last 7 years. I have been involved in a lot less in the last 2 years, but so it's the kind of task that we do at MoveMe is to help organizations like public organizations, like city and public transit, and private business organizations to design, plan, build, and evaluate shared mobility services. And that's all we do. Like shared mobility services is all we focus on. And in that way, invariably, even if you're not working with a city, if you're working with a private enterprise, you still have to get in touch with cities to understand how they feel about this new service. Because although they don't manage all these, it's very much a factor for them to consider because this is a public facing service available for the general public. So definitely there are more parameters to hit, right? So in that sense, you asked the question about what kind of challenges they face in new technology, right?
Correct.
And in that sense, I feel new technology presents a challenge for everyone. Most of us are familiar with the technology or product adoption cycle where we have the innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority, and lagging, I think. Consumers and users in the mobility technology terminology are the receiving end of this adoption, the end users, meaning the sheer number of users in each of these phases differs so vividly. Depending on the service and the influencing factors, innovators and early adopters, those groups could be more. Adoption cycles in technology today go across sectors. So if there is one disruption happening in, say, e-commerce, it has the impact on passenger transportation. And then that any disruption in your connectivity, like 5G or something, that also will have a big impact in the way we move and the way we do things. So in that case, it's like interwoven. And then speaking of transportation, the early majority is when we start witnessing behavior change.
Correct.
And I think this is where cities find themselves needing to strike a balance where, like I said, they have the toughest job because they want to strike a balance between citizens who are users and citizens who are non-users, right? So in that sense, I think there are three basic challenges that they have to cover, if not more, which is equity, which is in the new tech, if this new technology solution is available to all, and if it is accessible to all. The second point is about safety, where, like I mentioned, between users and non-users of a service, how do both of these groups interact with each other in this new emerging ecosystem, whichever mode we are talking about. And finally, there is this parameter that keeps coming up again and again with new technology, which is privacy and data. Who collects it? Who owns it? How is it secured? What kind of data is collected? And what's it being used for? So these parameters, if cities don't or the public policy doesn't handle these, then I don't think users can be trusting the service, you know, the way they do today. So that's why I think that's the biggest challenge, and the cities do a great job there. So do cities wish to kill emerging behavior or new mobility? Definitely not. Do they strive to tailor it to the local needs? Absolutely. So because transportation behavior is so hyper-local. From the operator side, do they like cities, getting involved a bit too much, or what is too much, what is not? Many of the operators don't, but that's why we need better public-private relationships where both sides understand each other. And basically, it comes down to the fact that operators want to have financial feasibility, right? And they want to see the service being picked up by as soon as they can. They want to move this into the early majority phase. Cities just want to make sure that it is done the right way. Does it benefit the user in the end? Absolutely. We may not realize it, but the private car that has been one of the most popular modes in cities now, unfortunately, I might add, this way because of regulations. Many of these regulations don't work. So there are a lot of flaws there, but still that has shaped the way we look at and interact with cars in our ecosystem.
The way I see it is like cities, although from the neutral viewpoint, it looks like, I mean, it's easy because there are operators who want to put the vehicles, deploy the systems, and there are users who are going to adopt. But cities actually have a lot of problem, as you said, in terms of regulating this, because unregulated business that is public facing is definitely a challenge. So cities, as you gave a good narrative of what kind of challenges cities face in deploying these solutions, and clearly shows that MoveMe does a lot of work around getting to the problem cities face and helping them in deploying solutions that are addressing all the challenges that you mentioned. Now, when we talk about shared mobility, the good thing at least that everyone can visibly see is most of shared mobility is now increasingly turning electric. So is that a convincing factor for cities to kind of say, let's do shared mobility?
I hope it does, if nothing else. But the way I feel is, okay, let's just roll a couple of points back. So transportation sector, on an average, across the world, is responsible for about 40% of the total greenhouse gas emissions. Looking at one of the most prevalent modes, the private car, transitioning that just as a mode to zero emissions seems like a no-brainer, right? EVs are great. They are zero emissions. They do a lot of positive things to the city and the way people behave with cars. But a great deal of effort is required to facilitate them. And over and above everything, there are perceptions and adoption hesitations. Typically, when it comes to changing one's behavior, this is what I try to keep focus on, because this is what I learned while implementing these projects back in my previous role, that electric vehicles can't be like the copy and paste for private car ownership. it's to be looked at from an electric mobility angle, where you it's almost like automotive sector like 50, 60 years back when gas stations weren't that prevalent, roads weren't that great, and affording a private car wasn't everybody's game.
Correct.
Today, EVs are at a state where those things are, we are able to witness that in some other shape or form. In that case, I feel that in our daily habits, it's proven that if we follow a new habit for 90 consecutive days, we are more likely to change it. So that way, if you're transitioning to electric mobility, you also have a habit change. You also need to have, so there is charging involved, there is range anxiety, which you have to come across and overcome.
Correct.
Then there is the cost factor, which by default, everybody thinks about, including the fleet. They think about the upfront acquisition cost, but we need to move to a mentality of total cost of ownership, which many fleets around the world have, but not many are able to make that call based on that, right? So to your question, shared mobility, is it easy to electrify? Answer is yes.
Mm.
Would it be something that would finally get cities to embrace shared mobility? I'm a little mixed in my response there, because I feel many cities don't have to think about changing behaviors by just adding a blanket like a rebate or incentive towards electric vehicles and then just see how the ecosystem shapes up on its own. But many other cities are taking it very slow, taking it very, very cautiously, because they, like in New York, they realize that it's not the electric vehicles that's going to, shape the future of the world or the city for them. It's about changing mobility patterns and keeping that to, efficiently moving people as many. So if you're able to move many people together in one vehicle from A to B, that's what many cities are focusing on. COVID has added a lot of challenges in that public transit or shuttle services around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I would hopefully think that this is a very short lived one. And in our lives that usually spans across so many decades, this comes and goes as a small blip and hopefully leaves a positive change in our mobility patterns. So coming back to the point of shared mobility, I think shared mobility should precede in terms of getting priority from the city. Electric vehicles only add on and boost the already possible shared mobility benefits that a city would get. And in many cities, having fully owned or semi-public entities to managing these shared services. So that's where I think it comes to, like, is it a funding question? Is it a financial feasibility question? What's the operator looking for? Right. So I just wanted to bring one point here, because we've done some work with bike share associations around the world.
Hmm.
And one of the largest bike share in the world, Velib, which is Paris. I think it's co-owned by the city of Paris. The EcoBC, which is a big bike share in the Mexico City, is also funded by the city. So when it comes to micromobility, cities and bike share specifically, cities are more involved than anything. And public authorities may extend to manage an on-demand shuttle service, but when it comes to like moped sharing or car sharing, those are mostly private owned. So what I mean to say is there are, if you look at the way Velib is managed and EcoBC is managed, they have different parameters to report on. And basically it's to make sure that it's a reliable mode first. At the same time, the city shouldn't be losing too much money on. Whereas in the car sharing or the moped sharing side, profitability comes first, because let's face it, businesses are in that sector because They're looking for growth. They're looking for, you know, success in terms of financial returns. Definitely, it's a great way for us to push those initiatives, because I would rather have a company make more money trying to give or trying to build a sustainable solution anywhere, right, across any sector that we do, rather than having a cheaper but non-sustainable product or service.
You do mention about cities and sustainability part of it. So differ from which cities we are talking about. I'm sure you would deal with cities like New York, Paris, but at the same time, look at cities that are not very big, but and doesn't have a big infrastructure like the undergrounds in London or the subways in New York. For them, micro-mobility is going to be very essential. So do you see a difference in how they see the sustainability aspect of shared micro-mobility?
Right. So for example, so is your question that what about cities, say, which don't have infrastructure?
Yeah, exactly. So if for cities that don't have like good public transit, for them, if there are operators who are ready to come and deploy thousands of bikes, thousands of shared mobility services, do they look down on the sustainability part of it? Do they worry less about, is this bike really sustainable? How long will the bikes last? Or will we see pile up of bikes down the line? Do they really care about that as well early on?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm glad you brought it up. So, that's a very close to my heart kind of topic. Before we get into that, I feel that, you know, electrifying shared mobility basically goes through three major challenges.
Okay.
So there is high acquisition cost. Then there is prioritizing good behavior, whether how policies would favor people switching into a good behavior, whether it's electric or whether it's shared.
Okay.
Then finally, when we are talking about electric, it's about charging infrastructure. Who gets priority? Who's able to charge first? Is it going to be the fleet? Is it going to be the private EV owner? And then is it also going to be like, if it's going to be expensive to access these infrastructure, then it would invariably mean that it would be expensive to access the service. And then is it for the rich only, right? So in that case, coming back to what you mentioned right now, say, let's pick bike share. Moving to e-bikes, how feasible is that going to be? From the operational side, we see that e-bikes definitely have at least 3 to 5 times the ridership that a mechanical bike has.
Wonderful.
So in that sense, I think it's a no-brainer for bike share businesses to take that on and to electrify their fleet. But at the same time, there is a additional cost, and we are also looking at how many. Fine, this is going from say 2 trips per day to 7 trips per day. But then, what's it that makes the profitability meter tick towards the, you know, the more greener and better financial return kind of thing? So that's important to see, and that's a big factor comes from behavior change, like we spoke of earlier. And in that sense, we have seen cities, say, for example, in China, where most of us are able to imagine the image, right? So which keeps making its rounds in social media and every other article that we read about bike share, the pileup of bike share bikes in a bike graveyard or something. So that's a pain to see that something as efficient as a bike is being thrown away and being abused. But that's the fact. And that's where I think it comes down to whether you have better infrastructure, whether every city, fine, they don't have infrastructure enough for maybe public transit. And that's one of the biggest challenges with public transit, right? So extending any service, whether it's a bus service, and worse if it is train, you need so much of capital investment, and then it just goes into this big spiral of the next 10 years ROI, or maybe 5 years if it is a short one.
Correct.
So that way, public transit has bigger challenges. And that's where I think quickly bike shares, like especially e-bike shares, can come in, and even e-scooters can come in, and they can make sure that there is like an arterial public transit line running through the city. And then these shared modes are available in mobility hubs across. And this has been verified and evidenced that this works. We've not seen formal mobility hubs in Vancouver, but we have bike share stations outside metro stations here at SkyTrain stations. I know in Mumbai, my previous hometown, I've seen, you know, bike share companies having this tie up with like metros and Mumbai local stations. Even in Delhi, they have tie ups with, you know, certain hubs and creating some kind of a last mile connectivity there. So I think it's about showing people that there is this mode available. And it's always a chicken and egg story, right? So whether infrastructure comes first or behavior change comes first. And this is where I would refer back to what we mentioned, like the early adopters and the early majority. I think a new mobility service relies a lot on early adopters. And when you have these folks biking around in the city, and enjoying themselves, that influences others. There is social media, there is advertisement, and then people start, the more they see, the more they become comfortable. And then, and in both sides, right? So not users and non-users, if you are in a car, you become more aware of having to expect a bike somewhere around the corner.
Correct.
That helps safety. And at the same time, the biker, when they see a couple of other bikers in the same road, even if it is not a great 5-star protected bike infrastructure lane, they still feel safe because they know that they are not the only one. So I think behavior and early adopters, and that's where how in cities where they don't have infrastructure, these needs to be pushed and cities need to allow certain things. And then in that sense, to crack down on how, you know, the ecosystem interacts. So in that sense, if you have, say, scooter sharing being in conflict with pedestrians when scooters are ridden on sidewalks, which is a big problem in North America, then you need stronger regulations from the city to make sure that they are not done. At the same time, it's like bikes. Nobody rides a bike on, I mean, let me put it this way. So nobody rides a bike as much as they do scooters on sidewalks. I think that has a lot to do with, of course, the size of the vehicle, but at the same time, the understanding that you could, the comfort that you could ride a bike on a lane, even if it is not a protected lane, versus a scooter, which is a smaller vehicle. So I think it's just a behavior change that needs, and then infrastructure will definitely keep boosting it.
It clearly comes down to how cities enable the infrastructure to kind of induce this behavior change. So if I can see and understand from the examples that you cited, it comes down to cities to kind of induce this kind of behavioral change so that people are aware that there are other services and I don't have to take my car out, or I don't have to buy a car in the first place. I can use the services and kind of be mobile as I can. And now talking of mobile, we did discuss about technology early on. Technology has been a major factor, especially the mobile technology has been a great enabler in kind of getting more such shared mobility services on the ground. So what's the impact been like?
In general, I think technology, specifically connectivity and smartphones, have impacted our lives in unimaginable scale, right? So imagine when, and I remember this from your previous session with Sampo at WIM. He mentioned that he was working on a system to manage scheduling through SMS.
Correct.
when I listened to that, I was like, oh yeah, who would even think of that now, is what I was thinking. Then immediately when he mentioned the year, I was like, it wasn't too far back.
Correct.
So it has so soon become like a smaller part of what we do today, right? So the text message and SMS, and then we've moved on to like interacting with apps, and everything has an app. Everything wants data. Everything wants access to every account that you have. So users have challenges and trust issues there, but at the same time, it's facilitating behavior even more. And I think technology, in that sense, it has had its the bad days and wrongdoings, but at the same time, overall, it's helping move transportation in a better direction. And shared mobility is one of the beneficiaries in that sense, because even going back to car sharing has been existing for the last 30 years or so. And in that sense, only in the last maybe 15 years, it has come mainstream because of, guess what? Smartphones.
Exactly.
So in that sense, I think that has helped a lot to shape how people feel comfortable about transportation. And I also think going forward, the technology is also going to play a very, very, very important role in pushing people to go for alternate transportation solutions, right? So that's where I think this concept of multimodal mass or integrated shared mobility or mobility as a service comes in. And I think that's one of the things that as a passionate mobility professional, you've always thought of that as being a solution, but you always thought that there was something else that was stopping from happening. So I would always come back to the thought that what happens to my car? Do I get rid of that? Do I not use my car at all? Where do I park it? So I wasn't able to break free of that thought, the thought of abandoning my car. And then I moved continents basically a few years back. And before I could get my hands on a car or anything like how I did back in the Middle East, I was able to experience bike share, transit, scooter sharing, and car sharing here in Vancouver. So that way, I think it was a fantastic opportunity for me to go car free. And that's what I did. And since then, so that's what I mean by behavior change. Once you have that big behavior shift, then you don't have to, then you don't feel the need to come back. So I think mass helps to do that. And I think, I mean, from our projects, we've seen that people aren't rational, right? So you think that this technology, and typically mass today gives you options between like choose your mode based on filters. And those filters are typically cost, speed, and maybe convenience. But there is one overarching thing, I think, which makes sense in a lot of ways, which is culture or preference, however you want to call it. And that dictates what I would prefer. So based on how I have looked at transportation in my entire life as a user, I will have certain biases towards certain modes, and I would be hesitant to try that out versus going back to something that I've always done, although I know that it doesn't work all the time, right? So in that case, I think mass or technology helps push that. And I think cities are embracing that more than ever, especially since COVID. And the public-private partnerships that we mentioned earlier is becoming a lot stronger today, because cities and transit authorities are transportation departments are more open to exploring these new modes. And I think we see that in cities in India. We see that in advanced cities like Singapore, where always public transit was the number one priority. We see that in Canada, in US, in Europe, and we are also seeing that in Latin America. And in our experience, Latin America could be, none of these markets could be as different from each other, right? And that goes back to the point that we mentioned that mobility is hyper-local. And in Latin America, the preferences are mostly to do with safety, equity, access to all, at the same time, beating congestion. And similar factors or preferences apply for a country like India. In Vancouver, we were a part of this multimodal mass pilot, and it ran for 11 months as a pilot, and now it's gone into phase two, and we are working towards that. And as Moomi, we were managing the project between the public transit authority here in Vancouver, two car sharing and one bike sharing, and the task was to integrate that into one transit fare card for a limited pool of users because it was a pilot. And what we were testing was behavior change than anything else, right? So, and that's where I think the data after 11 months showed that 30% of the users, it wasn't a big pool. It was a very controlled, I mean, not in terms of controlling the parameters, but controlled group.
Mm-hmm.
Based on how we were trying to test technology and fit more than anything else. So data showed that 30% of the users tried a new mobility service. And public transit was also marked as new for many. Car sharing was anyways new. Bike share was anyways new. So that way, I wasn't surprised at the car and bike share
okay.
results that we got. But then public transit was new.
Interesting.
And I felt, how could in a city like Vancouver, you haven't tried out public transit? And that is because of the access to cars and the access to, or maybe those users never used public transit because they always stayed, you know, within that 10-minute range in their schools, in their colleges, in their work site. And more than half of the results that we got, more than half tried a car share for the first time from the 30%. So that was very encouraging. The team, we ensured that the parameters of the pilot are thought through and considered in a variety of scenarios. And that way, I think it was, mass is still new, but at the same time, we have to work in a very hyper-local behavior changing mode so that we are able to bring that wonderful technology that's out there and help cities and users have a very customized solution with whatever works for them specifically in their city.
That's very interesting. Very interesting to know about the study from Vancouver. Now, Venkatesh, on a final note, we did talk about the behavior change and how cities are embracing technology, getting new players involved. And we particularly discussed about this hyper-local commute. And since you are discussing and dealing with cities on a regular basis, there is this trend of 15-minute cities. So what is it like and how is it going to shape up in the years to come?
Don't you just love that concept, 15 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever?
Yeah, that will be great for us, especially if coming from India.
Yeah, exactly. And from Bangalore, your hometown.
Exactly.
Because I don't remember one, and I have not been to Bangalore for more than a decade now, or maybe just a decade. And I remember my plight in stuck in traffic, and I wasn't even driving, and I was frustrated. And I hear from my friends that that's still the case in Bangalore. I know whenever I go home in Mumbai, that's the case. And it pains me to think about, you know, a city like Mumbai being deadlocked in so much traffic where everybody, and I think from a culture, we're talking about culture and hyper-local behavior here. And I think specifically in Mumbai, it was so much not a car centric culture, which is now
correct
blanketly on being, you know, sold so attractively, so that people are just falling into it. I think the talking about 15 minute cities, Paris is among the one of the leading cities who've I think gone ahead and implemented that plan, and they're putting all the pieces together. I think just recently, maybe today, I read an article that they finally, I think it's today that Paris has opened up or rather restricted all its streets to 30 kilometers per hour speed.
Okay.
When I say all, I am going with a caveat. I might not know if there are how many exceptions are there, but that's what I read. And that's so pleasing to hear. One, if you're driving a car, then you might not like it. But again, I feel people don't like that concept of slower speeds because they associate slower speeds with congestion and taking more time. Whereas we know if you zoom between A to B at 80 kilometers per hour, and then the last mile, like B to C, you are stuck at 5 kilometers per hour.
Correct.
You still don't gain the overall benefit that you would have done, say, A to C in 30 kilometers would have been far better, efficient, and less time consuming. Right. So we all have seen it whenever we've had like a smooth ride, not as fast, but gone from A to C or A to B. We've not felt so stressed about, rather than being, you know, rushing from one spot to the other just to be stuck at a tunnel or something like that, right?
Correct.
So I think from the 15-minute cities before automobiles, I think it's not a new concept, because I've grown up in a city where it wasn't a new concept. So before automobile, cities had no option but to be accessible within 15 minutes.
Correct.
Suburbs weren't existing until the automobile revolution, which is fine, because automobiles have handled a lot of economic growth. But now that we've learned it, the side effects and the ill effects of automobiles, it's time to go back and build, you know, denser, compact cities. I grew up in Mumbai. Most residents and visitors would agree, and if you visited Mumbai, you would agree too. The urban train system, the Mumbai local, is the lifeline of the city's transportation capacity, right?
Correct.
And for all the time that I spent, like more than two decades that I spent in that city, I pretty much lived within that 15-minute bubble, believe it or not. My school, our shopping needs, social needs, like meeting people, relatives, friends, everybody, my sports, leisure activities, university, my parents' workplace, everything, you name it, everything was conveniently within 15 minutes and 15 minutes train ride from my home. And I never realized the value before I left the city that was so convenient. I never had to think how far I was and how I need to plan my trips. If I miss a train, I just take a bus. If I miss a bus, fine, you can always carpool with some buddy of yours or take a cab or something. It's never too far. So I think that's where cities should be getting back to. And from personal experience, I can say that 15-minute city becomes a reality and mobility patterns stay around shared mobility in that part then. So earlier in my experience, shared mobility was just public transit and maybe carpooling, unorganized carpooling at that time. But now there are so many options. So you have bike shares, you have e-bike shares, you have car shares, you have in Paris that we speak about, there is a micro car share by the name ENU, ENU,
correct,
which is not even classified as cars. It's classified as scooter cab or something. But I think those are great innovative modes that we need to bring to many cities and then test them, see how behavior patterns emerge. And then it will make sure that every city is able to move towards that 15-minute thing, right? So electrification does help, because when you're going into this denser, super compact city development, then you need fresh air to breathe. Cannot have all this, even shared mobility in that sense, whenever it's idling or something. If you can eliminate emissions, why not? So electrification should follow. But I think the first thing about 15-minute cities is for cities to focus on less, like how they can prioritize and, you know, pretty much impose zonal instructions for shared mobility, favoring shared mobility, and at the same time bring in electrification there.
Interesting. That's good to know. You bring a perspective of being in Mumbai. I mean, it can't get denser and more compact and at the same time more mobile than in Mumbai. So that's a wonderful example that you bring to this conversation. And glad to know that it's getting there. It's getting back to shared mobility, electrification, and cities are getting compact because you don't want to waste time in commuting. So that's interesting to know. Venkatesh, it's been insightful conversation, I should say, because getting to know the perspective from cities' point of view on how they plan mobility rather than deploying more vehicles, how they plan looking at mobility, how they get into shared mobility. And it's been a wonderful and insightful conversation about how cities plan this. So thanks for joining me on the podcast, taking time and sharing your views and experience of working with cities.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on this. And this has been one of the, I love Mission Shunya podcast because it's about zero everything, right? So, and I love the diversity that you bring in your content, where it talks about not just mobility, but even waste management, energy management, all of that. And I think that's the way to go. And I'm happy to add on, but at the same time, I'm passionate to live in a city and make this change happen and see that happen. So that's a lot of fun in my everyday work.
That was a wrap on the features segment. Hope this episode, just like the other 65 other episodes released earlier, was useful to you. The intent is to get you thinking about the global zero carbon transition and maybe enable you start with a small action at your end. If transportation is your subject of interest, you can connect with Venkatesh and the MoveMe team. The links to connect will be in the show notes section as always. And if your bigger objective is to ensure the message reaches a wider audience, the simplest way is to share the episode link to people in your network. Feedback appreciated as always, missionshunya@gmail.com or the review section of the podcast platforms is the best way to get your message across. As always, I will be back in 2 weeks' time. This is Girish Shivakumar signing off. And as always, thank you for listening.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.